Welcome to GemaraMarkings.com. If this is your first time visiting the site, we highly recommend utilizing the two links found in the yellow box at the top of the page. Enjoy your shear.
Today's shiur will be beginning from the top of Kuf Yutes Omid Aleph in Maseches Bava Basra. The Gemara opens up with a quote from a source that appeared on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin Omid Beis, seven lines from the top. Omar Mar. As you can see, we are quoting from a Tanaic source, as the next two lines appear in a frame. The habonim notlu b'schus avi avihem. The bonim, the children of the meraglim and the misloinim, received a portion in Eretz Yisrael through the grandfathers, whether it be their father's father, or u'b'schus avi imoisehen, or through the merit of their mother's father. The Gemara asks, we have another source that indicates that the bonim, that these children of the meraglim and misleinanim, received bischus atzmon, vahotanya, but we have a source, it's only two words, bischus atzmon. How do we resolve these two sources? So the Gemara suggests two answers, and they're numbered off one, and two lines later you see a number two. Lo kasha. There's no difficulty in resolving these two sources. Ha keman de Omar liyotze Mitzrayim, the source that says that they received bischus avi avihen, that the receipt of land on the part of these children of meraglim and misloinanim was through their grandfathers, that is according to the opinion that the land of Israel was divided according to those that exited Mitzrayim, that left Mitzrayim. This was an opinion that we saw on Kuf Yud Zayin Omid Aleph under the name Rabbi Yoshia. Ha, the other source, the second two-word source that you see here, that says they received B'schus Atzmon, Keman Di Omar Leboi Haaretz. That conforms to the opinion that says that the land of Israel was distributed according to those that entered the land. Hence, they who entered the land, these bonim of the meraglim and misloinim, it can be said that they received bischus atzmon. V'iboy esema, an alternative resolution, ha v'ha leboy haaretz. Both sources are referring to receipt of the land or division of the land according to the those who entered the land. V'lo kasha, ha dehave ben esrim. The source that says bischus atzmon, that refers to those that were 20 upon entering the land. Ha deloy havu ben esrim. The other source refers to those that were not 20; they were under 20 when they entered the land. The Rashbam expounds on this across from here, a few lines down. He says deloy havu bnei esrim kishibo laaretz u bivnei. B'nei ha-mislaninim komairi. And we're talking here about not the sons of the mislaninim, but rather the grandsons of the mislaninim. Shemesu lohen avihen shehoyu b'nei ha-mislaninim. These are people whose fathers died. Who were their fathers? They were the sons of the mislaninim. Reading that phrase again. Shehoyu b'nei ha-mislaninim mamish. And they died Bamidbor, Fehem Nisharut Felim. These grandchildren, at the point of entrance land, were still Felim. They were still under 20. Velo Notlu La'atzman. They didn't receive on their own terms, or on their own merit, Shadayim Lo Higiu Lo Yesrim. U'b'schus Avihen Mamish, B'nei HaMislinunim, Ein Lohem Litol, Shehein Mi Mitzrayim Lo Yotzu U'l'Eretz Lo Bo. And as far as receiving a portion in the land, these individuals, these youngsters, these under 20s, who are the sons of the b'nei ha-mislaninim. They couldn't receive by merit of their fathers because their fathers were neither leavers of Mitzrayim nor those who entered the land of Israel. So how could they possibly receive any chelek in Eretz Yisrael? Ela b'schus avihen. They could receive through the merit of their great-grandfathers. Who were they? Dahinu avos ha-meraglim sheyatzu Mitzrayim. The fathers of the Meraglim who exited Mitzrayim. So we have to just think for a moment, how is it that they are going to receive through their great-grandfathers? The Keva the Hach Braisa Kerabi Shimon ben Elazar Muk Mina La De Is Le Tarti. Since the source that we're quoting from over here that says Bischus Avi Avihem, that source is established according to the opinion of Reb Shimon ben Elazar, who appeared before on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, and he said that the distribution of land Eretz Yisrael was based on both leavers of Mitzrayim and enterers to Eretz Yisrael. As a result of that, Nimtzu Elu Bnehem Yorshin Oison Kibenoi Slochod. These great grandchildren of the fathers of the Meraglim would be entitled to land, just like the Bnei Slofchod Sheyorshu Benichse Chefer Ziknam, just like they received a portion that was due to their grandfather Chefer. V'afagav the Chashivi Ketfelim Diamo, even though they're considered like standard Tfelim, which means standard under 20. This is a very important point, that as far as receiving land in the merit of one who left Mitzrayim, you do not need to be above 20 upon entrance to the land. With that, we conclude the section of the Rashbam that's relevant to our discussion right now. And as you can see, we had in this last piece of Gemara two Tanaic sources seemingly contradicting each other. The Gemara offered two possible resolutions. We continue in the Gemara. This is a quote from the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Tes Zayin Omid Beis. Vishahoya Bechor. This was a reference to Slofchod, who was a firstborn of Chefer. Noitel Shnei Chalokim. He was entitled to two portions, namely a Bechor, as is well known, receives a double portion in the Yerusha. So, as far as him being the firstborn son of Chefer, he was entitled to two portions of the Chefer Yerusha. The Gemara raises a question that was in fact discussed in an earlier sugya, and that point for those who are learning this for the first time needs to be reviewed. A Bechor receives a double portion only in property that is currently held by the father, namely property that's in the possession of the father at the point of his death. Outstanding properties, things that the father himself hasn't received yet, is only property that's only anticipatory, and the father died not yet acquiring that, even though it might have been anticipated. The firstborn son is not going to receive a double portion of that. Now we're talking about people that left Mitzrayim, never got to Eretz Yisrael, and we're saying that Slofchod is entitled to a double portion of land in Eretz Yisrael that was due to Chefer. But they didn't get to Eretz Yisrael, so it's anticipated property. It's not actually possessed property. How could you then talk about a double portion? That's the Gemara's question here. Ve'amai, ro'i hu, the division of Eretz Yisrael as far as the Slofchod and Chefer are concerned, was only anticipated. The Ein HaBechor Notel Beroy Kibemuchsok. A Bechor doesn't get his extra portion, what's known as the double portion. Double portion is a term used relative to the other brothers who receive single portions. He receives a portion equal to the other brothers, plus one additional portion, namely a double portion. But he's not entitled to that because he doesn't receive Beroy Kibemuchsok. He doesn't receive a double portion in anticipated properties as he does receive in the case of held properties. Held, we mean held by the father at the point of his demise. At this point in the Gemara, we see a geometric form. We see a triangle. This indicates a series or something that will be somewhat repetitive. In order to appreciate what these triangles are going to do, we're going to glance at the side where we have our Nosei Mivneh heading. The triangle appears there. Shnei Tirutzim. Two answers. Lahazbir Ech Notlu Benois Slavchad. How is it that the daughters of Slavchad received Chelek Bechora, a firstborn entitlement? Kishiyoidin Shtein Bechor Notel Baroi. When we know that a Bechor doesn't receive in anticipated property. We see first Rav Yehuda, and then a few lines later we'll see Rabba. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, B'yaseidois Eiholim. When we're talking about the double portion, we're talking in fact about property held by the father, and we're not talking about Eretz Yisrael, we're talking about the Benos Slavchad receiving a double portion in portables that Hefer had at the point of his demise. Literally, Yesedos Oyholim we can translate as tent pegs. But the Rashbam says that that's just an example of something that was commonly owned by the people traveling in the Midbar. But it covers all forms of metaltalin that they are holding on. In other words, that they're in possession of. And that on that we say there's a chelek b'chora. Mosiv Rabbah. Rabbah introduces a Tanaic source as a kasha on Rav Yehuda. Is a difficulty in saying that the chelek b'chora that the Mishnah was referring to was a reference to metaltalin, a reference to portables. Why is that? So let's see the source. Rav Yehuda Omer. Benos Slavchad Notlu Arba Chalokim. The Benos Slavchad received four portions. Shinemar Vayiplu Chavlei Menashe Asora. We discussed this posuk and the description of the division indicated in this posuk in earlier dapim. So at this point, for our purposes, it's enough just to say that the expression Chavlei Menashe is a reference to karka. So this source is telling us that the four portions that the Benos Slavchad received, which includes the Chelek Bechora, is a receipt of property in the form of land. Elo Omar Rabbah. So Rabbah offers a second teretz as to how is it that we can talk about a Chelek Bechora when discussing Eretz Yisrael, which they haven't physically taken possession of yet. So Rabbah answers, Eretz Yisrael, muchzekes hi. Eretz Yisrael was considered held by the Jewish people already at the point that they left Mitzrayim. They were viewed as legally in possession of it. If that be the case, so then there's no problem in assigning a double portion to the Benos Slavchad by virtue of their father having been a Bechor. The Gemara now raises a question, but you'll notice in the margin between, or in the space between the Gemara and the Rashbam, an encircled kuf with a vertical dashed line following it. This represents a long question, and it continues till Amud Beis, where you see that the long vertical dashed line ends opposite the third line from the top. In order to appreciate the question, it will be necessary for us to utilize brackets that we'll see in the middle of the source, and then skip to the second line from the top, where the Gemara concludes the content of the question. The Gemara continues with a question, as we said, Meisvei. As you can see, it's a long Tanaic source by virtue of the fact that all of this is in a frame. Amar Rabbi Chidka, Shimona Shikmuni Hoya Li Chaver Mitalmid Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Chidka tells us that he had a friend by the name of Shimon HaShikmuni, who was a student of Rabbi Kiva's. V'kach Hoya Rabbi Shimon HaShikmuni Omer. Thusly he said, Yoidea Hoya Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu knew Shebenoi Slofod Yorshosain. He knew that they were entitled to an inheritance. Avolohoyo Yodea im Noitlois Chelek Bechoro im Lav. Before we continue in the Gemara, we just have to take note of some of the markings. There was a house form that we saw two lines ago. That's explained in the outside margin. Shnei halachas Shemoshe Rabbeinu hoya loy sofek bohen. Two halachas that we'll see that Moshe Rabbeinu had some type of doubt about how to deal with them, how to resolve them. The first one we just saw, and we also added a dashed underline in the Gemara because this is our focus of attention, that he didn't know whether the Benos Lofchad are entitled to receive a chelek b'chora or not. Before we continue, we must take note of the brackets. And the note on the inside margin, where there's an asterisk, it says, Sograim Elu L'Shem Diluk. The brackets here are designed to show that we should do an initial skipping, Le'afsher Lir'ois HaKushya Ba'ofen Miyadi, in order to enable us to see the Kasha immediately. We just said that Moshe Rabbeinu did not know whether the Benos Slavchot receive a Chelek Bechora. Skipping the brackets, we turn to Amud Beis. Ve'i Salka Daitoch Eretz Yisrael Muchzekes. If one is to think like Rabbah said, Rabbah's answer was that Eretz Yisrael is Muchzekes, is already possessed. But if that's so, my ka mistapka le, what is Moshe Rabbeinu in doubt of? He shouldn't be in doubt of that which we dashed underlined on Omid Aleph, where it says he doesn't know whether they get a chelik b'chora. If it's so, like Rabbah says, that Eretz Yisrael muhzeket, so of course they get a chelik b'chora. The Gemara answers, he gufa ka mistapka le. That which is obvious to us, in other words, that which is obvious to Rabbah, that Eretz Yisrael is muhzeket, is in fact the point that Moshe Rabbeinu was in doubt about, and eventually it was resolved for Moshe Rabbeinu. That we see Rabbah saying what he says, that's a result of Moshe Rabbeinu's doubt and the subsequent resolution of his doubt. When we get to this section of the Gemara later, we'll go over the point. At this point, though, we should go back to the bracketed section in the Tanaic source and then recap what we've done. As we said, the bracketed section was designed to be skipped. You'll ask, why is that? So the answer is that in the bracketed section, will be introduced some other topics that Moshe Rabbeinu had a doubt about, but it's not related to our topic of Chelek Bechora and inheritance of Eretz Yisrael. We also are now going to encounter another geometric phenomenon, and that is the double underline with the dots in it. It's one of our series markings. We also can take advantage of the structure note on the outside margin. You'll notice a form of a double underline with the dots in it, and it underlines the expression "Ru'uya Hoysa," etc., that a certain parsha was fit to be recorded by Moshe Rabbeinu himself on his own without reference to other incidents. The note says here, "Base parshios shenichtavu ayidei maisim miuchadim," two sections of the Torah that are recorded seemingly by virtue of specific incidents. L'lamdecha, why is it that a section of the Torah comes to be only because of an incident? Couldn't these laws be taught straight out like the rest of the Torah? What is the significance of having a law taught through an incident that preceded it? L'lamdecha, the note says, shemegalgalim zechus ayedei zakai v'choyva ayedei chayav, to teach us that we see through heavenly involvement that positive things come about through those who are positive individuals, and negative things come about through those who are viewed as negative. Turning back to the Gemara, Ura'uya hoisa parshas nachlois likosei v'ayidei Moshe. In theory, the section of the Torah dealing with inheritance could have been recorded by Moshe Rabbeinu, as many other halachas and mitzvahs of the Torah recorded without special incidents attached to them. Elo shezachu b'nai slavchot v'nichtav al yadon. However, the b'nai slavchot were very special women, and they merited to have a section of the Torah come about through them, namely the section of Torah dealing with inheritance. V'yodea hoya Moshe Rabbeinu shamakoshesh b'misa. You notice the second house marking, because this is the second topic that Moshe Rabbeinu will be in doubt about. So Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara says, knew that the Mekoshesh was a story featured in the Chumash, where a person was involved with some form of Shabbos violation. He's known as the Mekoshesh. Exactly what Avera, what transgression is involved by Mekoshesh, that itself is the subject of controversy. So for convenience purposes, we'll simply refer to him as the Mekoshesh, with the awareness that he's a violator of Meleches Shabbos. Now Moshe Rabbeinu was aware that the Mekoshesh is guilty of a capital offense, and hence capital punishment is due to him. Shenemar mechale mois yumos, as it says regarding Shabbos, the one who violates it is guilty of capital offense. Avolohoyo yodea be'e zo misa hu yomus. What Moshe Rabbeinu was in doubt about was what penalty, which form of capital punishment is due to him. Uru'uya hoisa parshas mekoshesh shitikosei v'ayde Moshe. This section dealing with the mekoshesh could have been written without a story accompanying it, without the mekoshesh incident preceding it. Elo shenischayev mekoshesh v'nichtevo al yodoi. However, the mekoshesh, being one who committed an act of violation of Hilchos Shabbos, of the laws of Shabbos, he acted incorrectly, and as a result of his behavior, this parsha was recorded. L'lamdecha, this phenomenon of incidents happening, and as a result of those incidents, halachas are then recorded, teaches us the following idea. Shemegagalim zechus al yedei zakai, that which is meritorious, that which is positive, comes about through those who are positive. In our example, the Mel Slavchot being tzidkonios, being righteous women, and hence the parsha of Nachla came about through them. V'choivo al yedei chayav. And likewise, that which is negative comes about through he who is negative, namely the Mekoshesh. The Rashbam on the second line from the top says, V'chova haynu skila shechamura. The chova, the negative halacha, if you will, is a reference to the penalty of skila, which is what the Mekoshesh was going to be guilty of, is considered a chova in the sense that it's the most severe penalty. The Rashbam says, Shechamura, why? Denoyach le'adam ladun b'chenek. If people were given a choice, albeit a very dismal choice, they would prefer to be subjected to chenek, which is considered a lighter form of penalty than skila. As you can see, the brackets close here. That means that we should go back in our minds to the original point, to the main point. And that is that main point being a question on Rabbah's contention. Rabbah mentioned that Eretz Yisrael was muchzekes, and hence we understand why the Bnei Slofchad were entitled to a chelik b'chora and not getting involved with the problem of ro'ui. However, the Gemara asks, v'isalka daitach Eretz Yisrael muchzekes, if, as Rabbah claimed, that Eretz Yisrael was muchzek, was viewed as possessed by Slofchad, my call mistafkale, so what was Moshe Rabbeinu in doubt about? And we had featured with our markings, with a dashed underline on Omid Aleph, Moshe Rabbeinu's doubt, where it said, Lohe yodea im noitlois chelik b'chora im lav. He didn't know whether they are entitled to a chelik b'chora or not. If you're telling me that Eretz Yisrael, as Rabbah said, is muchzekes, so it would have been clear that they are entitled to a chelik b'chora. So the Gemara answers, he gufa ka mistapkale. The issue that Moshe Rabbeinu was in doubt about is in fact the same topic that we have clarity on. In other words, he experienced doubt. His doubt was resolved, and we're simply picking up on the resolution of his doubt. The Gemara now will explain, will give all of the background to what was Moshe Rabbeinu in doubt about and how it was resolved. The Pasuk says, V'nasati oisa lochem moirosha ani Hashem, that I will give you the land of Israel as a moirosha. How are we to understand this expression that it's going to be given to us as a morosha? Two possibilities. Aleph, Yerusha hi lochem me'avosechem. O Dilma, beis, or possibly shemorishin v'einon yorshin. Let's go over the two possibilities. Does the term morosha ani Hashem indicate that the land of Israel is a Yerusha to you? Namely, it's considered muhsak. If it's a Yerusha to you, to those people who were in Mitzrayim, then it's viewed as muhsak, and there would be no problem with the Chelek Bechora. Oh, Dilma, it could be, on the other hand, that the term Morosha means Shemorishin V'einon Yorshin. The Rashbam that we'll take a look at explains the significance of Morishin V'lo Yorshin. We should notice the section in the Rashbam, more or less across from here, where there's a double asterisk. At the end of the line, the word pshita, li, it's clear, demorishin v'einon yorshin hu, that this aspect of the Jewish people leaving Mitzrayim were viewed as morishin and not yorshin, midichtiv morosha v'lo ksiv yerusha, from the fact that a special word was chosen, Morosha, as opposed to a more conventional term, Yerusha. The Ode, Sharei Kvar Mesu Kulon Bamidbar. And it's also obvious to us that they are not going to inherit the land because they died in the Midbar. They died in the desert. Elohachi kom mivoyalei. Mi ikol lemeimar nami dehachi komar. Is there a possibility in understanding this pasuk that the following was also conveyed? Yerusha hi lochem me'avoseichem. That even though you are not going to inherit the land physically, nevertheless, it is an inheritance from your forefathers. And if you classify it as a Yerusha, v'noto bo ha-bechor, chelek bechora. Tekeva dechsiv lochem, morosha. Since the expression lochem morosha appears, Yerusha hi lochem nami boi lememar. The intent of the pasuk is to say that it also has an aspect of being a Yerusha, being a standard inheritance, entitling the Bechor to a double portion. O Dilma. On the other hand, the Rashbam continues, Morishin ve'inon yorshin l'chud komar. Notice how we've emphasized the expression l'chud with a diamond. This is contrasted with the diamond that appeared a few lines up where you saw the word nami. Namely, according to the first approach, the people in Mitzrayim had, there were two aspects to describe their relationship with the land. According to this possibility, only one characteristic, namely, Morishin Veinon Yorshim Lechud Komar, Avol Eino Yerusha Lahem. But it's not an inheritance unto them. And if you say that, then Velo Yitol Bo HaBechor Chelek Bechora. If that be the case, that it's not a Yerusha to them, then the Bechor would not be entitled to a double portion. Continuing in the Gemara. We saw in the Gemara that Moshe Rabbeinu had this very point as a matter of doubt. And the Gemara had quoted the Pasuk that we'll read again on the fourth line from the top. Dichti v'nasati oisa lochem moirosha ani Hashem. And we see all the two possibilities. Aleph, Yerusha hi lochem avosechem. Is the land of Israel viewed as an inheritance unto you from your forefathers? And that would have made Eretz Yisrael muchsak, oydilma, or possibly shemorishin ve'enon yorshim, that the choice of the word morosha was to convey only one idea, and namely that they, the people in Mitzrayim, would be a conduit for the transfer of the land to the eventual heirs, but they themselves are not inheriting the land. And as a result of that, if you classify them as that, then the Bechor would not be entitled to a double portion. Upashtu le trevayu. And Moshe Rabbeinu's doubt was, both points were resolved. And when we speak about both points, you'll see that very clearly in the Gemara. Aleph, Yerusha lochem me'avoseichem, that we are going to view the land of Israel as in fact an inheritance, and hence they're considered muchzuk on the land, and the Bechor would be entitled to pishnayim. And Beis, the second point, umorishin v'enon yorshim, that the people spoken to, namely the people in Mitzrayim, the Jews in Mitzrayim, those who left Mitzrayim, are going to be a simple conduit for inheritance, but they themselves are not going to inherit. Let us glance at the way the Rabbeinu Gershom deals with this section. In the middle of the narrow section, you notice an asterisk. The Rabbeinu Gershom says, "Poshtu le bezin shalmala, the heavenly court resolved Moshe Rabbeinu's doubt. Travayu, namely Yerusha hi lochem me'avosechem." The land of Israel is a Yerusha unto you from your forefathers. V'titlu bo pi shnayim, v'kvar muchzek es hilochem. And as a result of that, there would be an entitlement to a double portion for the firstborns. That's because we're saying it's muchzek es hilochem evosechem. Avol, morishim atem osa livnechem, v'ein atem yorshim osa. On the other hand, you will be Morish the land unto them. Namely, you'll be a a conduit of the inheritance that you'll cause them, you'll cause your descendants to receive, but you yourselves will not receive. So in the Pasuk, in Shmos Vav, we see the expression Morosha, conveying this idea as well, that they will be Morish, the land, but they themselves will not enjoy the land on their own. V'hainu dichtiv, tivi emoi v'sita emoi bahar nachloscha. Pasuk is found in the Shiras Hayam, that says that you shall bring them, as opposed to the word us, as the Gemara will point out momentarily, that to the emo vasita emo, you shall bring them and plant them in the mountain of the inheritance. To the enu lo nemar, that you will bring us, it doesn't say. Ela tevi'e moi, you will bring them. Melame shemisnabin ve'inon yodin ma misabim. It shows us that they, the Klal Yisrael, who were part of the splitting of the sea story, from where this pasuk comes, were saying something of a prophetic nature and not realizing it. What is that? Once again, they were saying that Moshe Rabbeinu would bring them, third person plural, and not us. Of course, as we know, the Dor HaMidbar never made it into Eretz Yisrael. The generation that was part of the Kriyas Yamsuf, they themselves never made it into Eretz Yisrael. This piece of Gemara then parallels the idea mentioned just before, Mo Rasha, Morishim ve'enon ve'enon yorshim, that they cause others to inherit, but they themselves will not be the beneficiaries of it. As we continue in the Gemara, we see a Tanaic source. In this Tanaic source, we see in the middle of it numbers 1 and 2, the two opinions, and the Gemara after it will deal with trying to understand what the point of controversy is. Before we continue in the text of the Gemara, let us glance to the side, the nosei, of a topic heading, Shnei Deos, two opinions, the Hasbir, Hatsura, Shebo, Shalu, Benoi Slavchot, Es Sheiloson, Kamuzkar, Vaposuk. Two ways to explain the form in which the Benoi Slavchot posed their question, as is featured in the following pasuk, Vatamoidno lefnei Moshe, lefnei Elozer HaKohen, lefnei HaNesiim v'chol Ha'eda. They stood in front of, and the order is worth noting, they stood in front of with their question. In front of whom? In front of Moshe, in front of Elozer HaKohen, who was the son of Aaron, and in front of the heads of the different Shvotim, the different tribes, and in front of the entire community. Let us proceed with the Gemara and the Tanaic source. Vatamoidno lefnei Moshe, lefnei Elozer HaKohen, lefnei HaNesiim, v'chol Ha'eda. So they, the Benoi Slavchot, were standing with their question regarding their entitlement to land. Efshur, omdu lefnei Moshe. Could it be that they stood in front of Moshe with their question, Velo Amru Lohen Davar, and Moshe and Elozer as well didn't answer their question, the Amdu Lifnei HaNesiim V'chol Ha'eda, and then they would turn to a lesser authority, namely the heads of tribes and the general populace, and expect them to answer? How do we explain this pasuk, the order of people featured? Ella, so the first approach is Sareis HaMikra V'Darshehu, Divrei Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yoshia's opinion is, understand the pasuk in reverse order from what is presented. The Rashbam explains this a little further. The second line under the Gemara text, it says V'Darshehu Klomar, Darshehu ke'ilu kosov l'mafreya. Expound on the pasuk. We're not going to change the text of the pasuk, heaven forbid. But as far as the understanding, darshen it as if it were written backwards. As follows. V'atamodnu lefnei Moshe. And they stood in front of Moshe. Umekami Moshe omdu lefnei Elazar. And before they approached Moshe, they had stood in front of Elazar. Umekami Elazar. And before they approached Elazar, omdu lefnei Hanasim. Umekami Hanasim omdu lefnei Ha'edah. And before the heads of tribes, they had stood in front of members of the general population. So, as far as that's concerned, so then the events as they actually happen make a lot of sense. They appeared in front of the later authorities after receiving no answer from the earlier, lesser authorities. So they were simply building up as they went on. V'hai, the Rashbam explains, V'hai de lo kosev atamod lefnei o'edo lefnei anesim lefnei o'lozer lefnei Moshe, and that the Pasuk doesn't spell it out thusly. It leaves us to offer an interpretation. Hainu lefisha eno roitza lahaktim v'posuk talmud l'rav. It doesn't want, in simply writing the text, to have the student written before the Rav, namely, for example, writing in Elazar before Moshe Rabbeinu. Elo rishon rishon choshuv. Rather, the Pasuk mentions, the earlier ones mentioned have more significance than those that are mentioned later. But as far as historically how events took place, that's what the Rabbi Yoshua is claiming, Sareis HaMikra V'Darsheu, understand it out of order. Number two, Abba Chonon Omar, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Beveis HaMedrash Hoyu Yoshvin, V'Holchu V'Omdu Lohen Lefnei Kulon. That means that they were standing in the Beis Medrash and asked their question in front of all of them, in front of everybody that we mentioned above. And what in effect took place is that expression of honor was shown to the Talmidim, namely everyone who learned from Moshe Rabbeinu was considered a Talmud of his, so that we're, by posing a question in front of them, in the presence of Moshe Rabbeinu, shows that we're being chole kavod to the Talmidim b'mokim rabam. We're showing expressions of dignity and honor to students in the presence of their teacher. The Gemara continues. B'mai komiflegi. What's the underlying point of controversy between Rabbi Yoshia and Abba Chonon? Gemara answers. Mor savar chokin kavod l'talmid b'mokim rav. Abba Chonon, the second opinion, would hold that it's quite all right to show a demonstration of honor to a student in the presence of his master, in the presence of his Rav. Morsava Rabbi Yoshia, who said, Sareis HaMikra V'Darsheu, would say, Ein Cholkin, that you don't show expressions of kovod, of honor, to the student when in the presence of his Rav. The Gemara then goes on to offer a curious psak, a curious legal rendering. Says Tehilchaso Cholkin, that's point Aleph, point Beis. Tehilchaso Ein Cholkin. Cholkin meaning Cholkin covered the Talmud b'mokim Rav. Do you show a demonstration of honor to a student in the presence of the Rav? But these two halacha, these two piskei din are contradictory. Kashi Hilchaso Hilchaso. One says Cholkin, one says Ein Cholkin. The Gemara answers, Hilchasa, Hilchasa lo kashya. There's no stira, there's no contradiction here. Ha de polig le rabbe yakra, ha de lo polig le rabbe yakra. If the rabbe is cholik yakra, covered, shows covered to his student, so then when you come along and ask a question, you can pose it to the student in the presence of the rab as well. After all, the rab himself shows expressions of kavod to the student. Ha delo polig le rabbe yakra. The opinion that said sareis hamikra, that would be Rabbi Yoshua's opinion, would hold that in a case where the Rav doesn't show kavod to the student, then you wouldn't be able to pose a question to the student in the presence of his Rav. Tana. We see another Tanaic source. Benois Slavchad, Chachmonius Hain, Darshonius Hain, Tzidkonius Hain. The Benois Slavchad are described by three complementary terms. What the meaning of each term is, we have the ensuing Gemara to do that. Notice diamonds that appear in the coming text. These diamonds are explained in the outside margin, Tiurim Shel Benois Slavchad, descriptions of the Benois Slavchad, as follows, Chachmonius, that's in the first diamond. The second diamond, a few lines later, you see they were viewed as Darshonios, and the third one, Tzidkonios. What do these terms mean? Let us see the Gemara. Chachmonius Hain. Shelefi Sha'a Dibru. Their Chochma is the ability they had for timing. Lefi Shah, they knew how to time their question. They started their question when they had an opening, so to speak. What does that mean for us? The Omar Reb Shmuel Bar Yitzchok Malamei Shemesh Rabbeinu Yosef V'Dorish B'Parshas Yivmin. The story of the Benois Slavchad took place at a time that Moshe Rabbeinu was introducing Klal Yisrael to the Parsha of Yibum. What's Yibum? Yibum is a situation where you have two brothers. One brother was married to a woman and died before ever producing children. The Torah Halacha of Yibum says that the surviving brother shall marry the almona, the widow of his brother. Of course, and only in the case where there were no children. Shenemar, the Pasuk says regarding Yibum, Ki Yeshvu Achim Yachtov, and the Hemshech of the Pasuk is on the side, inside margin, you'll notice, it says, Umeis Achad Mehem, one of the brothers died, Ubein Ein Lo, Lo Tieshes Ameis Achutza, Liishzor, the widow shall not marry some outsider, Yevoma Yevo Aleo, Lekocha Lo Lishav Yibmo, her brother-in-law shall take her and marry her. How does all this connect to the Benois Slavchad? That, of course, is what the Gemara is going to explain right now. Omru Lo, the Benois Slavchad said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Im keben anu chashuvim, if we, females, are like a male child, if we have here Slavchad dying, leaving just daughters. So if we are to be viewed as a son, Tana Lanu Nachlo Keben, then we should be entitled to a portion just like a son. Im Lav, and if we are not viewed as a son, then Tisyabim Imenu, then our mother should be entitled to do mitzvahs Yibum. Miyad, after hearing their question, their doubt, Vayakrev Moshe es Mishpatan Lefnei Hashem. That's from the Torah. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu presented their case to the heavenly court. That section of the Gemara that we just learned was to describe what is conveyed by the idea that they were Chachmonius Hain. Their Chochma was manifested by their ability to time their question. Namely, Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching Parshas Yevamos, and they then presented their issue of how are we to be categorized, as a son or not. If we're as a son, then we're entitled to a portion. If we're not viewed as a son, then our father died, leaving no bonim, and therefore our mother should be entitled to do mitzvah yibum. Darshani is hain, the Gemara continues. The second of the three expressions of complementary expressions to the Menos Lafod. What does this mean? Show you Omros, they used to say, Ilu hoya loy ben, lo dibarnu. If our father would have had a son, then we wouldn't have spoken up. The Rashbam, in the Y section, says, Ilu hoya lo ben, kirichtiv, ki ein lo ben, ukvar hoya yodua lahen, shaben yoresh es aviv. The Pasuk describes him as not having a son, and it was already known that a son inherits his father. They knew of Parshas Nachlos. Their matter of doubt was only concerning the double portion. But as far as receiving a portion, they knew they were entitled to that. Now, if that be the case, how is it that they knew that they were entitled to that? The pasuk in the parsha of inheritance says, if a person dies and he leaves no son, then it's passed on to his daughter. Ha yesh lo ben. However, one can infer that if he would have a son, who koydim lebas, he would preempt the daughter. Their awareness of how to learn the psukim led the Chazal to entitle them as Darshan Yosheim, those who know how to expound on the psukim. The Gemara asks a question, a very vague question. It says, V'hotanya bas. The Rashbam explains, V'hotanya, there's a Tanaic source that says, Ilu hoisa bas lo dibarnu. That if he, Tzlafchad, would have had a daughter, then we wouldn't have spoken up. He who is introducing this into the Gemara text itself, the one who asks v'hotanya bas, he himself doesn't know how to explain this. What does that mean? It doesn't make any sense. How could the daughter say that if he would have had a daughter, then we wouldn't have spoken up? They are daughters. To explain, to get out of this particular problem, we have two approaches. Number one, Omar Rabbi Yirmiyahu, Sami Mikan Bas. Press delete, so to speak. Just, Sami, delete this source. It's not reliable. Number two, Abai Omar, Afilu Hoyo Bas Leben Lo Vibarno. What that brief source that was introduced, the line above, namely V'hatanya Bas, really meant to say that if he, Tzlofchad, would have had a Bas Laben, namely a granddaughter from a son, we wouldn't have spoken up. Because, why would they not have spoken up? Because they knew that a descendant from a son, even if the descendant be a female, would have preempted them being daughters. Namely, a son and all his descendants preempt daughters. Tzidkonios hein. The third description, and it's hence our third diamond, what is it that caused the Chazal to describe them as righteous? Shelo nisu elo lahagun lahem. They married only those that were fitting to them, that were of a high enough caliber. The Rashbam says on this, Shelo nisu elo lahagun lahem, kidamoron lekamon, as the Gemara will explain momentarily, benois slafchad hutru li nase lechol mishi yirtzu. That even though they were called bas yoreshes, they were inheriting females, they, unlike everyone else, were entitled to marry whomever they liked, even if it was someone from another shevet. It says in to whomever they want, they can be as wives. So why is it that the Torah relates that they married dafka men from their own tribe? Eitza toiva hisiyan akasa. The pasuk is really sharing a piece of good advice. Shlo yinaser lo hogin lahem, that they should choose for them as their mates people on a sufficiently high caliber. Almo mishpachas matavien hagunim hayu. We see from this that the people that were associated with their with Slavchot's family were fine, high quality people. Vashvan shenis ulahem, and we also find that they married those gentlemen. Kidichti vatieno machlo v'noet choglo milka v'tirtzo. Those are the names of the five daughters of Slavchot. Livnei dodeim lenashim, they married their cousins. Even though they had license to marry any gentleman, they chose to restrict themselves to special gentlemen. Continuing in the Gemara, Tani, Rabbi Lozer ben Yankov, Afilu, Ktana Shabbat Melnises, Pusa, Me Arboim Shana. Even the youngest of the Benos Slavchot chose to hold off on getting married until 40. In other words, even the youngest of them did not marry until she passed age 40. And why is that? Because they were looking for the hagun, for the proper one. The Gemara asks, that based on what Rav Chisda is going to say, that would seem to be a very bad decision. More asks, Amy, is that so? V'ha Omar Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda teaches, Nises, if a woman gets married, Pchusa Mibas Esrim, Yoledes at Shishim. If she gets married at an age under 20, she'll have the ability to procreate until 60. Bas Esrim, if a woman gets married at 20 or above, Yoledes at Arboyim. She'll bear children until 40. Bas Arboim, and this is what's relevant to our discussion, if she marries at 40, Shuv Eino Yoledes, she won't bear children anymore. So, imagine a woman who chooses to hold off on getting married because she's searching for Mr. Right, and she keeps holding off until she passes 40, she's not going to have kids. The Rashbam explains a little further, three lines from the bottom. Shuv eino yoledes v'in nis akfu ad arboim shana lo haya odem noise oisan. No man would want to marry them. Why would a man want to marry a woman that's not going to bear children? V'hein nami lo haya lahem nis akev ad arboim shana me'achar shel yeldud. They too should not have held off on getting married until after 40, knowing that they wouldn't bear children anymore. The Gemara answers, Ella, mitoich shetzitkonios hein naase lohen neis. Since they were righteous, a miracle would be performed for them. Rashbam at the bottom says, mitoich shetzitkonios hoyu betuchos besikos shasam neis. They were confident in their piety as being the basis for a miracle to be performed for them. The idea of a miracle concerning birth performed for an older woman is featured in the ensuing Gemara, where the story of Yocheved is presented, the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu, that we find her bearing children at quite an advanced age, at the age 130. You can see in the markings a bracket appears. This bracket is explained on the inside margin, Achrei HaSograim, HaGemara Chayzeres LeInyan B'noi Slofot. After this bracketed section, the Gemara will pick up on the topic that we've been dealing with just now, namely, the daughters of Slavchot. B'soich ha-sograim, ha-gemora marchivo b'inyan yocheved. Within the bracketed section, the Gemara will elaborate on the story concerning Yocheved, v'hanes she'olida begil mitkadem, and the miracle that she was able to bear a child at an advanced age. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.